If you're tired of these promos, supporters get the podcast early and ad-free. Just go to donate.bogosity.tv for the links to sign up. Welcome to the Bogosity Podcast for the week of August 2nd, 2020. The podcast that wonders if it really sounds like that. This is your host, Shane Killian. Let's de-emphasize the news of the bogus. We've talked before about the problem of identity theft, how individuals get their lives basically ruined when their personal information gets out and malicious actors impersonate them, ruining their credit or even relationships, and possibly even a bogus criminal record. We haven't talked about business identity theft, but it's a real problem, especially for small businesses, and it's just getting worse during the COVID-19 pandemic. So many small firms have gone under or are put on hold during the pandemic. Others have to figure out how they'll keep going. Organized fraud rings, as they do, have adapted to take advantage of the situation. Dun & Bradstreet is basically a credit bureau for companies. Creditors use it to check the creditworthiness of a business that's applying for a line of credit. In 2019, Dun & Bradstreet saw a 100% increase in business identity theft. For 2020, they estimate that'll end up being 258%. According to Alex Holden, founder of Hold Security, there's a gang of thieves operating in Georgia and Florida, but targeting businesses nationwide. They do this by going to the Secretary of State website in the state where the business is incorporated, and that gives them the owners of the company, as well as the information they need to get Social Security and tax ID numbers from the dark web. They then begin fabricating documents, including tax records and utility bills, and file those with the Secretary of State with a mailing address that they control. Once they do all of that, which isn't as involved as it might sound, they can then go to Dun & Bradstreet and pose as the business. In some cases, they've actually been able to hack into the firm's D&B account. At that point, although they usually wait a few months to help cover their tracks, they can start applying for lines of credit in the name of the business and then go on a buying spree. The business owner usually has no way of knowing they've been compromised until debt collectors start calling. The fact is, small businesses don't even have the same protections afforded to the individual consumer. A small business can't place a credit freeze, for example, and the banks and other creditors don't do the same reality checks when a business places a loan than when an individual does. Employee identification and tax ID numbers don't have the same protections that personal information does. Some states even require that businesses make public the very information that can make them vulnerable. Additionally, local law enforcement has been notoriously unhelpful to businesses who have had their identities stolen and misused. In fact, it really seems as if the onus is placed on the business owner to check with both D&B and their Secretary of State just to see if there happen to be any unauthorized changes. D&B recommends constantly checking your business records, personal and business credit, state records, industry contacts, accounts, and inquiries made to the business's credit report. But most small businesses don't have the personnel to consistently and continually do this. In fact, most small business owners are just swamped with the requirements of doing business. D&B has a monitoring service, but it costs the business over $100 a month. There's a free version, but it's so limited as to be basically useless. As with the regular credit firms, D&B needs to be responsible for securing the information it gets from third parties. As the business has no choice whether or not D&B gets its information, the same issues we've covered with Equifax apply. Ads are annoying, but ad blockers prevent publishers from making money. What if you could support your favorite websites, YouTube creators, Twitch streamers, social accounts, and many more ad-free and without paying anything, and even make some money yourself? It's not a pipe dream, it's airtime. Go to airtime.bogosity.tv and get the browser extension, and you'll earn cryptocurrency for the sites you visit, and so will the publisher. This is not a crypto miner. You and the publisher will both get part of the reward from current miners of the BitTube cryptocurrency, with no middleman taking a cut. Even if the publisher hasn't signed up yet, his tube will be put into a dedicated wallet that he can claim upon sign-up. You can also use your tube to tip publishers and even purchase products. Airtime monetizes users and publishers with no ads or crypto miners. Go to airtime.bogosity.tv and start making money now. People who make their own versions of copyrighted songs by changing the lyrics are afforded some fair use protections. If the result is a parody, where they're directly criticizing or lampooning the song or artist, the protections are pretty solid. For satire, where the target isn't specific to the song or artist, they're not as solid, but they're still pretty strong. The most famous person to do this, Weird Al Yankovic, always gets permission from the artist, but this has more to do with avoiding bad blood with artists and labels, as well as protecting against nuisance lawsuits, than anything that's legally required. But now, the record industry is going against a prolific creator of parody lyrics, and it isn't even a human. It's an algorithm which is called by its creator, Mark Riedel, Weird AI Yankovic. And it's absolutely 100% fair use. And yet, when he posted his AI's new lyrics for Michael Jackson's Beat It, Twitter took it down after receiving a DMCA takedown notice from the International Federation of the Phonographic Industry, who represents record labels. Riedel has contested the takedown, but as of yet hasn't heard back from Twitter, which they are required to do by law within 10 business days. Casey Fiesler, professor of information science at the University of Colorado Boulder, says there's a wrinkle, however. Unlike most parody artists, the AI uses the original audio and just superimposes the lyrics over it, making for a visual transformation, but not audio. Whereas most parody artists play their own version of the music. She says that can make the fair use argument more difficult, but that it still should be considered fair use. Quote, "This new product is both a parody and a sort of karaoke-style video. It is definitely really different than what the original song is, which is kind of what transformativeness is." But the AI itself puts a different wrinkle on it. Is a computer algorithm capable of infringing copyright, and is fair use not considered transformative when it's done by an AI and not a human? Fiesler doesn't think it makes a difference, and for support, she cites Authors Guild v. Google, where Google successfully defended its digital transformation of 20 million books to make an electronic index and make searchable snippets, as well as providing digital copies to its library partners. The Second Circuit considered this to be fair use. Also, consider the fact that the content companies use algorithms to send out these notices in the first place. We've covered several times where ridiculous things, like public domain Beethoven symphonies and even white noise, were targeted for takedown. These algorithms can't even positively match the content all the time, let alone determine whether or not it's transformative fair use. The IFPI didn't help their case, though, when they told Motherboard, "Whilst we don't give explicit details of our specific content protection work, we use a combination of manual and automatic processes. This example would have been manually checked for a fair use claim as part of the protocol." So, one way or another, this was deliberate on their part. Of course, not only do the big content providers not want fair use to even exist, they've been claiming that even simple inspiration is copyright infringement. They even hate libraries, but more on that later. So expect crap like this to continue. If you're on the Wi-Fi in a coffee shop or hotel, anyone on that network can get your traffic. Do you really trust all of those strangers? For that matter, do you really trust your ISP? A VPN can protect you from prying eyes, disguise your location, and even foil government sensors. It's essential in this day and age, so go to vpn.bogosity.tv and you'll be taken to BoxPN. Starting at just $2.99 a month, you can get unlimited high-speed connections to VPN servers all over the world, and they don't log connections, so your privacy is assured. Traveling abroad, just VPN home, and don't worry about what those other governments are doing. Back at home, stop your ISP from traffic shaping and messing with the quality internet access you're paying good money for. You can connect from multiple machines at once, including your smartphone or tablet, and it supports all the secure standards, including OpenVPN and SSTP. Bypass sensors and surveillance with your own secure VPN connection. Go to vpn.bogosity.tv. During COVID-19, we all have to do our part, including wearing masks when we go outside. Washington, D.C. has joined with countless other states and municipalities with issuing a mandatory mask order, with the penalty being up to 90 days in jail and a $1,000 fine. Unless you're a politician, judge, or federal employee. They're exempt. There's pretty much a scientific consensus about using masks to prevent the spread of SARS-CoV-2, the virus that causes COVID-19, but there's no consensus on these orders. The data says that they're basically a wash and don't make a difference one way or the other. But it's really telling when politicians exclude themselves from the oh-so-necessary orders they give to the rest of us. Unlike such orders elsewhere in the country, the D.C. mandate doesn't make an exception for anyone else, except for people who have to wear work equipment that precludes mask use in cases of medical conditions or disability, or a deaf person needs to read their lips. That's it. That's a lawsuit waiting to happen. There are some ridiculous exceptions. Masks are required when coming within 6 feet of another person for more than a fleeting time, whatever that means. But they make an exception for people engaging in vigorous outdoor exercise as long as they're social distancing and don't come within 6 feet. Well, then it's not an exception, is it, morons? Meanwhile, Georgia Governor Brian Kemp has sued Atlanta Mayor Keisha Lance Bottoms over her mask mandate, and of course Bottoms says Trump is obviously behind that, even though Trump has said that mask wearing should be encouraged. She also sent an investigator to find out whether Trump has violated the DC mask mandate, which, as a federal employee, doesn't apply to him! Meanwhile, Congress can't even agree on what their own rules should be on mask wearing in Capitol Hill. Personally, I'm about ready to just go everywhere wearing the gear that Dream does in the Sandman comics. We live in a world where light bulbs connect to the internet, and recent attacks on them prove that your online security is under threat like never before. Not only your websites, but the internet-enabled devices you buy. And the biggest problem is weak passwords. That's why you need LastPass. LastPass allows you to randomly generate strong, unique passwords on the web and on your internet-enabled devices, all protected by one master password. LastPass sets up in minutes and gives you secure automatic logins throughout the web, synchronizing across all your browsers, all your computers, and even your mobile devices, at home, at work, or on the road. It even securely stores sensitive form data, including credit card numbers, backup sensitive documents, software licenses, Wi-Fi logins, and more. And with LastPass Premium, you can get these benefits on other applications, manage passwords for your entire family, and also get priority customer support. Sign up at password.bogosity.tv for a free month of LastPass Premium. Log in securely everywhere using the last password you'll ever have to remember. Go to password.bogosity.tv and get LastPass now. And now it's time to charge a late fee to this week's Biggest Bogon Emitter. And this week it goes to Kenneth White of Canadian publisher Sutherland House Books. This is an interesting one because we're giving the biggest bogon emitter to someone who's actually being more honest than others in his position. From what we've seen, they pretty much all agree with this guy. He's just the only one who's come out and said it outright. I mean, after big publishers suing Google Books and even the Internet Archive, it's clear they don't like libraries that let people read their books for free. But when confronted with this, generally we get a lot of hemming and hawing. But White is pretty much openly whining about libraries. Quote, "Libraries operate largely with public funding, which has been disrupted far less than commercial revenues their competitors rely upon. As a result, libraries are more likely to gain still more market share at the expense of booksellers in the months and years ahead." It may seem strange to think of booksellers and libraries as competitors. That, however, is a fatally narrow lens through which to view the book marketplace. Booksellers are in competition with libraries whether they want to admit it or not. Just ask the libraries. Libraries throughout North America have been impressing upon patrons just how much money they can save by borrowing instead of buying books. He then goes into some very suspect math. He figured, American adults, according to the ALA calculator, saved just under US $30.4 billion last year by using their public libraries. For every book sold, roughly 4.5 are borrowed at no cost to the reader. Yes, it's exactly the same kind of bogus zero-sum math which is used by the record companies about online piracy. Each and every time a book is borrowed at the library must represent a lost sale. People often wonder what happened to independent bookstores in Canada and blame chains such as Barnes & Noble or Chapters Indigo or Behemoth Amazon for their decline. The chains and Amazon have definitely had an impact, but it is nothing close to the effect of libraries. But we've had libraries this whole time. Why would they be having such a detrimental impact now? Librarians defend their activities by claiming that they introduce readers to new authors and that surveys show people who borrow books sometimes also buy books. That is all true, but it doesn't alter the fact that 4 out of 5 books are read at no charge. Oh, shut up. The dirty secret of public libraries is that their stock in trade is neither education nor edification. It's entertainment. Oh my God, the fiends! Get out the guillotines! Of course, he's basing this on the fact that libraries provide access to the recent bestsellers. Is he admitting something about his own industry when he says that new books are mere entertainment? And this part was probably inevitable. These entertainment readers are not a benighted underclass for whom Tom Clancy is a stepping stone to literacy and employment. They are people who can afford books, disproportionately middle class, upper middle class, and well educated. Yep, gotta get on that SJW bandwagon! Of course, the solution, he says, is to give money to people like him. Quote, if libraries, or the governments that fund them, or the people who use them, paid more for the right to borrow books, that money could be returned to publishers, bookstores, and authors. He also suggested that libraries, and I'm not making this up, charge $12.99 a month to their patrons. Yes, he thinks that people should pay Netflix prices to something they have to drive to and get physically. Here's the dumbest part. Publishers will begin to ration their popular books, the ones that pay the bills, for the library market. Apparently, he doesn't realize that libraries can just go out and buy the books to go on their shelves. Someone try and explain the first sale doctrine to this guy. But regardless of his idiocy, he's telling us directly what the big content companies are obviously thinking. They don't want to go after libraries because they're not a very politically viable target. But as more time goes on, who knows how much bolder they'll get. We might see them going against all free lending institutions in the near future. And also, if libraries didn't already exist, it would be impossible to create them. Meanwhile, the Pirate Bay is still up. Just saying. So all of that makes Kenneth White this week's biggest bogon emitter. I want to tell you about the eyeglasses I've been wearing for years. As people can see on my videos, I have a very strong prescription, which makes glasses more expensive, especially when I need computer glasses, reading glasses, prescription sunglasses, and most expensively, progressive lenses for general everyday wear. To save money while still getting quality glasses, I get them from Firmoo. In fact, I just got a pair of progressives with high-index aspherical lenses and a nice pair of frames my wife loves for just over $100. It would have been $500 to get them through my eye doctor. Not only do they look good, the glasses are durable. I've worn many pairs for several years without problems. All orders come with a 30-day return policy, a 3-month warranty, and one-on-one customer service. Go to Firmoo, that's FIRMOO.Pogosity.TV, anytime you need quality glasses at a low price. Once again, that's Firmoo.Pogosity.TV. And now let's exfoliate this week's
Idiot Extraordinaire!
With all the copyright DMCA mess that we've been putting up with over the last couple of decades, it was only a matter of time before someone finally had enough. LaTanya R. Finley is a YouTuber who just got fed up with all the DMCA crap YouTube was doing and just up and sued them. Back in May, she received a DMCA complaint from Pixel World Roleplay Limited and received a copyright strike on her account. She said that YouTube provided no contact information from them, and that's how it works. You don't receive their information when they send a strike. They don't even have to provide any evidence they're the copyright owner. But when you file your counter, you must provide your personal information. Yeah, that doesn't open it up for abuse at all, does it? According to her complaint, defendants have repeatedly violated the DMCA requirements for copyright takedown by failing to provide the registered agent information such as full name, phone number, and email as required by the DMCA. This lawsuit seeks to hold YouTube accountable for the misconduct, negligent, and for the damage YouTube has caused the creator. Sadly, she seems blissfully unaware that they don't have to provide this information. She also seems unaware that they actually have a DMCA agent, but this is understandable since when you're the victim of an abusive complaint, such an agent is nowhere in sight. Quote, the plaintiff has no way of holding the alleged copyright owner for knowingly misrepresenting material or activity that is false. Therefore, the plaintiff material is removed or disabled without any consequences and despite the counter-responsive plaintiff plea of the false claim filed. YouTube ignores the abusive behavior of the alleged copyright owner, and the plaintiffs suffer adverse consequences as the material may or may not be activated. But sadly, the DMCA allows that, even mandates that. As we've covered on numerous occasions, that seems to be the idea, to make life difficult for small content providers so the big corporations don't have to deal with the competition. In fact, if YouTube doesn't comply, they can lose their safe harbor status, something that, absent the DMCA, would be guaranteed by Section 230 no matter what. She's suing for compensatory damages, costs and attorney's fees, and an injunctive relief barring YouTube from allowing the strike against her channel from submitting bogus infringement notices to YouTube. It would be insanely awesome if she prevailed. But as we covered, when DJ Shorty sued YouTube for not processing DMCA counterclaims, they fell back on their terms of service, which cannot abrogate the law, by the way, and the judge dismissed the case because YouTube didn't agree to act as a neutral processor of notices and counter notices. Yes, the deck is well and truly stacked. But the frustrating thing is, YouTube is actually in a position to do something about this problem. They could stand up for their users and creators and demand that copyright complaints be accompanied by evidence. Instead, a website owned by one of the biggest companies in the world is allowing themselves to be bullied at the expense of them and their creators. It is supposed to be perjury to issue a false DMCA complaint. They happen all the time, but there are still precisely zero court actions over it. We can probably include Pixel World and all sorts of other people, but it's primarily YouTube that, because of all that, gets named this week's
Idiot Extraordinaire.
Well, that wraps up this Did You Know Your Last Name's an Adverb? edition of the Bogosity Podcast. I hope you enjoyed it. If you did, please keep this podcast going by subscribing and supporting in one of several different ways you can find at donate.bogosity.tv, including PayPal, cryptocurrency, or subscribing at Patreon or Subscribestar to listen early and ad-free. Also, please come to discord.bogosity.tv, where you can join the discussion and post a question, statement, news article, or rant. Thank you for listening. Until next time, here's a quote from Lawrence Lessig. The current term of protection for software is the life of an author plus 70 years, or, if it's work for hire, a total of 95 years. This is a bastardization of the Constitution's requirement that copyright be for limited times. By the time Apple's Macintosh operating system finally falls into the public domain, there will be no machine that could possibly run it. The term of copyright for software is effectively unlimited. The Bogosity Podcast is licensed under Creative Commons Attribution on Commercial No Derivatives 4.0 International License.
Bogosity.
Do you have children or nieces or nephews? Are you homeschooling? Or just want to counter some of the socialist indoctrination most children get in school? If so, go to bogosity.tv/TuttleTwins, and you'll be taken to a website where you can get some great books for elementary-age children. The Tuttle Twins books are books about liberty and free market economics that include children's versions of Bastiat's The Law, Leonard Reed's I, Pencil, and Hayek's The Road to Serfdom, as well as books about the Federal Reserve and how regulations protect business cronies. They'll learn about the harm caused by eminent domain, or regulations passed in the name of safety, and fundamental concepts of liberty. And as you can see from the sample pages on the website, they're all easy to read and nicely illustrated. They're just $9.99 apiece, or get a special discount as well as free bonuses when you purchase all five. You can even buy in bulk to donate to schools and local libraries. So get the Tuttle Twins books at bogosity.tv/TuttleTwins.